And welcome to our podcast, Geeks Are Wired, where we talk about video games, movies, TV, comic books, technology, and TLDR, the Internet of Things. And this week, we have Anna.
Yep, I'm here.
And Ted.
Hi.
And Alex.
Hello.
And as always, we have Bill.
A Bill. Yay. I'm mixing it up how I want to introduce people.
Bill, just... Bill.
Ooh, Bill.
I don't know if I can do that. I might have just violated a copyright by humming it in the tune.
Well, my name is Bill.
Who owns the IP for the original Bill Nye? Isn't that Disney?
I would not doubt.
Wasn't it PBS?
Oh, maybe it was. They probably aggressively police that that theme song, because that's what everyone remembers about Bill Nye.
Has anybody called you Bilbo Baggins?
Yes.
Oh.
Oh, no, that's not a bad thing. Actually, I had it on a name tag that I had access to the ability to make name tags at one of the places I worked at. And I had Bilbo Baggins.
William Bo.
Bill S. Preston Esquire.
Yeah, maybe. And yes, it's PBS.
Man, I'm good. I just know because we never had cable, so I wouldn't have been able to watch it if it was on Disney or something. Although I can see him buying that up. I mean, HBO does have Sesame Street now.
Ugh.
So.
And Disney has The Simpsons.
I don't think that that's a horrible thing. I mean, because HBO can give them the production quality that they deserve. And then they release them like a week later or a month later or something like that on PBS. Like PBS still gets to show them, just HBO gets first crack at it, which I think is cool.
That is cool. So it's not just by listeners like us or watchers like us.
Right. Well, and then HBO like foots the bill for it so that Mitt Romney can't kick him off the air.
Or whoever else.
Yeah, whoever. I just know that in one of his speeches when he was running for president, he said, "Sorry, Big Bird, we're going to have to let you go," or something like that. People didn't like that.
Yeah.
That universally reviled figure in American culture, Big Bird.
Big Bird, yeah.
Well, unlike Sesame Street, we are brought to you by listeners like you. And we have a Patreon page.
Oh, yeah. People should join the Patreon.
Yeah. If you donate money, it helps us out. But you also, the more you donate, you can get access to the podcast earlier. You can chat with us in our private Discord channel. Or we even have an advertising level if you really wants to advertise something.
I would totally pimp your products.
Ooh.
Well, I'd have to be sure that I was morally okay with it.
Okay, it has
like,
to be.
Like, if you had a, like, if you're a company that sells, like, clubs designed specifically for baby seals, I might think twice.
Okay, so we'd have to negotiate the advertising. So nothing that extreme. But I'm sure if you wanted to, make your, have your new ARM architecture that you want to compete against ARM so they can have more stuff go on in the chip. We would totally, we'd even have you on at that point. And then you could talk about it all, have a super advertisement at that point.
The new ARM competitor, Leg, coming yes. to a cell phone near you.
Or it could be hand.
Torso. I like torso better.
Or there's always the foot.
Duodenum. I always thought duodenum was pronounced duodenum, because when I was playing Metal Gear Solid 2, I saw... Arsenal Gear duodenum, and I thought it was pronounced duodenum. I said duodenum once, and someone laughed at me for mispronouncing the duodenum. But here's what I say: the fact that anytime anybody mispronounces a word, it means they read it. Unlike you unread ape.
Well, it just means that they read it before they heard it, right?
That's true.
Or maybe they never heard it.
And yeah, I guess you didn't say the inverse, so I'll accept that explanation. So the inverse may not be true. Just because they pronounce something correctly doesn't mean they never read it.
But the onus is that on them to prove that they've read it before.
That's fair. That's fair. I can remember in school, in high school, we had to we had vocabulary words, you know, for English class, and we got extra credit if we read the word somewhere and we could put it in context and where it came from. And one of the words was nostalgic. And I was reading a what a Sparhawk.
Nostril Magic.
David Eddings, a David Eddings fantasy book. And it said so-and-so was feeling a little nostalgic, so he took his wife up to the barn and had his way with her. And I put it up on the board, and it stayed. I was surprised. Like, people kind of like looked at me sideways, but it stayed up there, so, and I got extra credit for it.
There you go.
They have these, this program for, I think it was originally called Accelerated Reading, and then it got like different names for. There was this catalog of books that had tests written by educators. And after you're done reading a book, you could take a quiz on it and you'd be issued a number of points depending on the level of the book. And there were a couple of books in there that had really high scores. One of them was, I think, a Tom Clancy book, which is definitely not junior high appropriate in my mind, but it's worth like 81 points. So, which would basically clear you for a whole semester. So there are kids that like would take the test on that Tom Clancy book and then write down the answers and then give them to other kids so they could just get off scot-free for the year. I actually wanted to read something kind of interesting. So I chose Stephen King's It, and there wasn't a test for It, which is probably good, but you're supposed to write a book report on the book you read when you're done with it to be issued any points. And that was a really awkward thing for a 12-year-old to write considering the content of it toward the end. But really, it's not much better than like the sum of all fears for someone for someone flies a plane into a public building. This is pre 9/11 though, so I guess that was less taboo.
Yeah.
That's fun.
Well, there's the Lord of the Flies that everyone is like, oh, read this when you're in junior high. It's like, really?
That's a pretty bad pick for a junior high kid. Actually, no, do it. It's subversive. Get the kids thinking that they could take over.
Ah, there we go. Yes.
I think it's good just to like kind of, I think junior high, you start to like people read like The Catcher in the Rye and they start like, they're starting to enter into the world of adulthood. So it like things start to get scary and confusing. And so some of these more adult books might actually be good for a junior high kid just because like they can see that the world is more nuanced than they originally had understood it. I think that would be helpful. I think it would have been more helpful for me personally. I mean, I did read like the fantasy stuff that David Eddings and whatnot, but like some of the other stuff would have been nice to.
You could have used some cultural enrichment in your reading, not just entertainment value.
For sure. Yeah. But I always purposely failed tests, so I was never put in the classes where they forced me to read stuff like To Kill a Mockingbird or anything like that.
Ah, why didn't I think of that? That was a great idea.
I just, like, if people didn't expect much of me, they left me alone more than if, like, oh, he's smart. So I'd, like, relish failing tests because then people would just leave me alone. They're like, oh, he's not weird. He's just dumb. I like that better for some reason. Kind of regret it now. I wish I'd done better, but whatever.
What's so bad with being weird?
Nothing now, but I mean, I
kind of embraced it back then. You know, you got picked on, but definitely just, you know.
But they pick on you less if they thought you were stupid and weird. Like if you're smart and weird, then they're going to give you a hard time. But if they think you're dumb and weird, like, I don't know, for me personally, it was just like, oh, that's why he acts that way. It's because he's stupid.
I counter that with, oh, go ahead, Anna.
Oh, I was just saying, I like to hang out with my nerdy, weird friends.
My counterpoint to not do it performing well in school is that my class president, who was in a bunch of honors classes, wound up robbing a Wells Fargo truck. So my counterpoint to that is dumb nerds that end up reading like at a higher level and doing like all the AP classes, they get to do some cool stuff after school. So I never got to rob an armored truck.
No, no.
Now, I'm not going to say that this is universal for everybody, but I know a couple of the kids that were like in the honors classes and did that sort of things that were just not very smart. Like they tried really, really hard, but they weren't like, you always think like it's the super smart kids. It's more to do with effort, I think, than smarts at a certain point. So
yeah, you can wear you can wear a tie to class every day, but yeah, that's you also have to be that kid.
Yeah,
I won't say either I was or was not that kid.
Oh boy,
but I do have some really cool ties, bow ties, in fact.
Yes, but do you know how to tie them? They're clip-ons, aren't they?
Well, my other ties are not. Let's go with that. I know how to tie a regular tie.
So he's not saying that his bow tie isn't a clip-on.
We went on a journey just now.
Bow ties are hard to tie. I bought 3 of them because I liked the pattern, and I still haven't worn them because I have no idea how to tie it. I looked up videos on YouTube, could not do it. I've tried like 5 or 6 different times, like on different occasions, to tie it, and I have never been able to do it right. So
the only time I ever really tie a tie is if somebody died, somebody's getting married, or somebody's getting a job. So it's, I have to look up on YouTube every single time I tie a tie.
Well, for a while, like after because I did an internship at the place where I work, and so after when the internship was getting close to being done, I just started wearing ties all the time because I wanted to get used to tying a tie so that I could do it by myself and have it look okay, because I was anticipating needing to apply for an actual job, and then they just took me on, and so I didn't need that skill.
Not bad.
Yeah, and then my boss was like, hey, I've noticed you wearing a tie, and I really appreciate it. I'm like, it's just to replace you. So, yeah. So we had some movies come out this
week. Yeah, let's go to the movies.
Last weekend, and it's doing pretty well, isn't it? I saw some numbers in the I don't know that it was breaking records, but it seemed like it was doing pretty well.
I've been hearing a lot of it being very, very packed. Mm-hmm. And apparently it already has the Rotten Tomato issue that some people, you know, the extremists mm-hmm. want or have with it. So it's got high ratings for the view or for the official raters, right, and ridiculously low ratings for
public. I swear, I mean, I've read some things about whether or not there's actually bots on Rotten Tomato, and the answers that I've seen have pretty much said that these seem to be legit, like the votes, like for The Last Jedi. Was it called The Last Jedi?
There was The Last Jedi.
Because that one was really high on Rotten Tomato, and then the users just hated it.
Mm-hmm. Justice League had the opposite.
So, but I think, I don't think it's necessarily bots, but
there's a possibility, but apparently Rotten Tomatoes has a thing set up for it.
Yeah, well, I read the Stack Overflow. There's a skeptics Stack Overflow that I like to read when I'm compiling my code. I used air quotes there, just so you know, compiling my code. That's what I say when someone comes up to my desk and I'm doing something I maybe not should have been doing.
Actually, the rating's not that bad. For Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
It's only 77.
Black Panther, 96 from the tomato, from the staff, and 77 for the
audience.
Yeah. But I really enjoyed it.
I did enjoy it.
And someone said that there was only 2 white people in the whole movie.
And there was
one
2?
One of them played Bilbo Baggins, and one of them played Smeagol. Which, those were the 2, like, as far as main
characters.
And
one of them played Snoke.
Snoke. Did the guy who plays Smeagol...
Smeagol played Snoke.
Oh, Snoke.
And yeah. Caesar.
He actually wasn't in a CGI suit or anything.
Actually, I had to remember what he looks like normally.
Yeah. But so anyways, yeah. But there were more Caucasians in that than just those 2. But as far as major roles go, it was just the 2 of them. So,
we're not going to spoil anything this week. We're going to talk about it. We enjoyed it. Minor things that, big thing, stick around. There is a mid credit scene and an after credit scene.
I actually had to ask about the after credit scene because I wasn't entirely sure about who that was, but.
Oh, there's actually more. So depending on what question you ask, there is the answer of who it was and then the name that was used.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So there's.
So I guess.
Additional homework.
Catch that. I thought that's just what they would say to that person.
I don't know if the final after credit scene was there was a revelation or anything there. I mean, we kind of knew what it was. If you watch any of the previous Marvel movies, you saw the A to B logic. You can't avoid it. If you've been paying attention, you already know that's what's going on in that particular scene.
Hmm. Well, yeah. Yes. And actually was kind of surprised that
I guess
that
I haven't been paying attention, so or I just don't read the comics, so I don't really know.
Oh, no, that's from watching the movies.
Oh. Yeah, I don't know if I don't know if that character's appearance is canonical with the comics. With that character being in Wakanda is canonical with the comics, but it's definitely in the movies. Anyway, it's not a huge revelation. If your butt hurts or and you want to go pee or something, you're not going to miss much if you miss the second scene.
Yeah,
I enjoyed it, and I think it leads up to some of the future things.
Yeah, it was really good. I really liked the storyline, and I liked the conflict, the twist conflict and whatnot, and how they came to resolve it, I thought was really cool. So I was quite pleased with the way the whole movie went through and how it handled issues. Because, I mean, there's definitely some issues of race that exist. And I felt like they handled them pretty well throughout the whole movie.
Yes.
Bill's reading about stuff.
Apparently, the nickname was originally Captain America's. That's why.
Oh, spoiler alert.
Just that alone.
Gosh.
Done. Not actually spoiler.
Gosh.
Just go with that. It's homework. I enjoyed the movie. They did a really good job with a lot of stuff, and all the story building there I felt like there was more character advancement and building in this movie than compared to a lot of the other Marvel movies. And though everything made sense. I can see how long this actually is. I felt like it was two hours and 14 minutes.
Yeah, it was super long. It did feel long. Like in the middle of it, I'm like, holy cow, this has been going on for quite a while. But it didn't feel long, like too long. Mm-hmm. Like, what was it? Batman versus Superman went on for like 6 hours or something like that.
It also managed to dodge the problem of Civil War, where they're like, okay, we're just going to go over here and fight. Okay, we're done fighting. Okay. Let's meet over here and fight again. Like there wasn't this laborious wasting the special effects budget. Like when they're selling on screen, it was connected to a plot element. It wasn't just blowing a special effects budget. Like something was happening. I felt like that kept the made the movie feel like less of a slog and kept it moving a little bit faster. Yeah, I didn't know it was 2 hours long. Mm-hmm. I figured it was actually lower than 2 hours. That surprises me.
No, I think it was 2.5 hours.
Two hours and 14 minutes.
Huh? Yeah.
So 2.25, basically.
Yeah. But I kind of just guessed based on, how long we were in the theater and everything at the 2.5 hour
But, yeah, well, and the, yeah, because there's the half hour of previews.
Yeah, all the previews and commercials and blah, blah, blah.
It, I had a lot of extra time on my hands, so I was kind of like, ah, we're just going. And then now we have extra time because the movie's over.
So there was a recent update to Pokemon Go where you can now, it's not super recent. I think you've been able to do it for a while, but you can actually collect Pokestops at all the gyms, and the movie theater here in Pocatello is a gym, so I did enjoy the length of that because I got to hit the Pokestop a little extra. And before you complain, I was sitting in the back of the theater and I turned the brightness of my phone all the way down so that it could minimize the effects of bothering other people.
There was nobody next to you though, right? Okay, I mean, Anna's good. One time I was like fairly far back watching, I forgot what a movie it was, but there was some lady that was flipping through Instagram baby photos. And it was just her entire feed was babies. It was all babies. It was like at some point, like I stopped watching the movie. I'm like, how many baby accounts does she follow? Are there just accounts that post babies? Or do all of her friends have babies? Are they collecting babies? Is this a human trafficking network? Should I call somebody? Where are all these babies now? Yeah, there was an unnerving quantity of babies in that feed. Like if like a dog came up or like Jake Paul or something came up, just anything to interrupt that, it would have been less unnerving instead of just like babies.
Okay, that, actually, with that, or the theater talking about, how many people are you in your guys' theater? Because I've been hearing about them, there being like ridiculous lines, everything sold out, all this other stuff.
So the line was long getting into the Big D. It wrapped all the way, almost all the way up to the last corner. No, it did go past the last corner, went to like the first theater. But like there were extra seats, but not a lot. There were probably like half a dozen empty seats, I think, that. Well, maybe more than that. There wasn't anybody sitting next to us on the other side, but yeah, there wasn't a ton of empty seats. It was definitely packed. And that was Sunday afternoon in the Big D. So yeah, it was pretty full.
Our theater was, Jamie and I usually go see movies at, cause her work schedule has her off Friday mornings. So that's usually when we go see movies because that's not a very common time for people to go watch movies, especially like if it's not a kid's movie. And there were definitely more than average. We had no trouble getting a seat, but yeah, it was above average. There wasn't like an insane line or anything, but it was more than like Guardians 2 when we went to go see it like on a Friday morning.
Huh. It must have been. I saw it like Saturday at 4, and I was like, this theater could put like 100 people, and there was probably like 20 actually. Like I was. Yeah, there was even like, should we be worried about finding seats? We're talking to the person taking our ticket. They're like, oh, you should be able to find seats by each other. We're like, we could literally find rows by each other. There's not this, you know, it wasn't like the Book of Life when we all went to that and we all had our own seat. But, you know, it was still, and I was like, this is not, what I was expecting, this is not bad.
I still feel bad about Book of Life because that's such a cute movie. And like, we were like the only three people in that town that saw that movie.
I enjoyed Book of Life, but I don't think I saw it in the theater. I think I saw it like on Netflix or something later.
We saw it in the theater. We were the only ones in the theater. All four of us in the theater.
I don't know why that was such a box office bomb. Like it was beautiful. Del Toro is like a great director. Yeah. Like the movie wasn't bad. It was fine. That movie still boggles my mind.
Speaking of that, we watched Coco at the cheap theater.
So how was that
here? And we loved it.
It was such a good movie.
So if you know Spanish, and I'm kind of bragging right now, it's a humble brag, whatever you want to call it. But but if you know Spanish, like some of the parts are even more poignant and everything. Because there's a part near the end where like the great grandma is dancing. She's forced on stage and she has to like sing. And do this little dance and avoid someone. And it's got a little bit of tension and everything like that. But the song that she sings, it's all in Spanish. And she's singing about how well, I don't want to ruin it, but like, if you don't know Spanish, the scene is still kind of touching, but it's all with the body language, and like, I'm just bawling because of, you know, the lyrics to the song. And then I look over at Anna, and she's just got these tears streaming down her face too. So like, it was a really good movie, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's a really good movie. I'm surprised that it wasn't advertised as much either. It's probably not as advertised just like Kubo was.
Yeah, but it was huge in Mexico. Was just crazy, crazy popular in Mexico. Yeah, so it actually made me want to like pick up the guitar and learn to play it again. Like I used to play guitar back in the day, and I've kind of put it down, but I kind of wanted to just like pick up and learn some of those songs in it, because like the music was really, really good, and the plot was just fantastic, and yeah, I mean, everything about it was super great. There was a weird moment where it revealed something that I thought had already been made very, very obvious, but it seemed like a surprise to all the characters, and so I was a little confused about that, but it might just have been that it was revealed just to the characters, and we as a third person knew. Yeah. But it seemed like kind of the way the tension they brought it up was like, this is a groundbreaking thing. But yeah, if you get a chance, like to see Coco, you see it on Redbox or at the cheap theater or something like that, my goodness, go and watch it. Cause it was fantastic.
I think it's on Vudu already. And like Google Play, like I think it's on digital download right now for rental or purchase.
Oh yeah, do it.
Like there's quite a few. I was surprised at how many were like The Darkest Hour is already available for purchase.
They're moving it fast because that's how people want to consume media, and it's really easy to get it to your home. So I mean, why wouldn't you while it's still fresh in people's minds? Mm-hmm. Like you milk the theater and then you just go. I mean,
Movies like The Dark Hour, where you know they want the awards and all the other stuff, so you gotta get in front of as many people as you can.
Mm-hmm. I don't think I saw that one.
Have you seen Dunkirk?
Nope.
Okay, it's like the predecessor to Dunkirk. Like when it ends, Dunkirk begins.
Dunkirk. Wait, was Dunkirk a World War II movie?
Correct. Yes. And The Darkest Hour is about Winston Churchill taking over.
Oh. Oh, okay.
As Prime Minister.
That sounds familiar. Yeah.
Like the movies all are right next, or the either the same execs or like moments, days crossing each other, mm-hmm. or one right after the other.
Yeah. So Anna, what did you think of Black Panther?
I liked it. I thought it was really entertaining. The action was really good.
Yeah, I agree. I liked some of those fights and him in that suit were really, really cool. Like the chase scenes, mm-hmm. I especially liked the remote control cars, and the chase scenes were pretty sweet. I kind of want my own magic sand.
That's a cool storytelling device.
Yeah.
For the listeners at home who haven't seen the movie yet, there's this, and they show it really early on, so it's not really a spoiler. Instead of like doing the classic storytelling thing they do in movies, that trope storytelling thing they do in movies now, if they want to show something that happened, it's like on a cell phone screen or something, which looks kind of crappy. In the world they built for Black Panther, the technology of Wakanda has this display technology that looks like this black sand that can form three-dimensional shapes, and it looks really cool. And it's a nice way to tell stories in the movie. Because they have to like go on a couple of sidebars, and every time they do, it's kind of an entertaining journey instead of just like showing some garbage on an iPhone.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So, and apparently vibranium is just magic, which is kind of interesting.
No, alien technology. Remember, remember what Thor said, the difference between magic and science is just how much you understand it.
No, vibranium isn't technology. It's just a magic rock that people made technology out of. Magic
ore. That's what
you think so? Yeah, magic
ore. Yeah, that's why they're digging out of the earth. That's Oh, spoilers. That's why they show early on that there's this crap from space that is vibranium in the Marvel universe. That's like this important mineral that is used in everything from Captain America's shield to just like random weapons to make them cooler. They've managed to sidestep adamantium as the meta material for all of the Marvel universe by never talking about Wolverine, but vibranium is like the number two most awesome mineral in the Marvel universe.
I think there's various versions of adamantium and
adamantium is vibranium. Poisonous.
Yeah, I don't think it's good for you.
As we find out from old man
Logan.
Because that was the explanation why his healing power wasn't working.
Wolverine loses his healing power more often than his keys. There have been two Wolverine movies about him losing his powers. Like, but he doesn't really have healing powers. He just sometimes feels like getting better and sometimes doesn't. It's like a coin toss.
I think my favorite was the time that he got shot in the head and the whole bullet came out of his head, like pushed out of his head. Like somehow it went through the adamantium into his skull and then pushed out.
His brain just like, nope, and shoves it out.
Yeah, it was magic. Like the bullet pierced the adamantium and then came out in one piece. Like it wasn't a flat slug or anything. It was a full bullet came out of his skull. What? Which one was Wolverine. That? They were stouting out.
That was actually X-Men.
Was it the original
X-Men? Yeah, it was the first X-Men.
Yeah, it was. I'm like, are you? Like,
well, Wolverine's been shot in that a few times. Are you talking about the time that he got shot in his own movie or when he got shot in the X-Men? Okay.
No, it was an X-Men movie.
Yeah, it was the X-Men. X-Men. Yeah, he got shot and I think he went down and then he got back up and it just kind of drops out of his head.
And I can see like a direct shot to the brain, like to the head. That's going to like cause your brain to move around. It's probably going to knock you out, at least stun you for a little while, even if you are Wolverine. But the thing is the slug would have just flattened on his adamantium skull and like probably ricocheted off, really, honestly. So they didn't need to like make it magically eject from his body because it never
went into his body. They were kind of loosey goosey with the mythos in the early X-Men movies. Because I mean that's when our idea of making a comic book movie was to instead of leaning too heavily on the lore the comics developed, they were like, well, let's just take the source material and rework it like we would for any other movie. And then they got confused why comic book nerds didn't like it. And they're like, oh, comic book nerds just want the exact same thing, but with actors.
Yeah. So some of it, yes. But then you also lose the general public because you only have the set group. And also Disney does have the access to use adamantium.
Yeah, there wasn't anything stopping them before. Like adamantium isn't like Wolverine specific. There's like other characters in Marvel that have familiarity with adamantium. Like I don't think X-23 was specifically. Well, actually, I don't know because she was. I think she's part of X-Force, but I don't know if that was covered by the Fox movie rights. Anyway, the adamantium is like elsewhere, and it's not just like the two skeleton people that have adamantium. Yeah. I think Captain America even had a shield made of adamantium at one point.
I think, his has been altered and also had a hybrid of the two.
A vibranium-adamantium mix?
Yes.
Oh, like an alloy that's stronger than both of them?
It's one of the most strongest indestructible items ever created by humanity.
Most strongest. Nice.
Most strongest.
Uh-huh.
Strongest of the most.
But, getting back to what we were talking about before, vibranium. It's just the magic goop that makes that let Wakanda skip the Iron Age and Bronze Age and go straight to the Vroom Age.
Okay, but there's two different types of vibranium also. They only talk about Wakanda's vibranium. Apparently there's Antarctic vibranium, which is an antimetal. Is this
other antimetal? Metal. That's a country, right?
Water. It disrupts metallic structures.
Oh, I get it. Antimetal country.
Yeah.
Like music.
Thank you, Ted.
A funny joke, Alex. Yeah. What else is made out of metal?
Oh,
I know. Robots.
Robots? Well, because it was talked about. Because we talked. Where'd it go? I moved it away. The Robo Dog.
Do-do-do, Black Mirror. Who gives a crap?
I do.
Anna loves Black Mirror.
You like your Black Mirror?
I haven't watched the latest.
Ted likes his Black Mirror. He looks at it.
I've been on my phone this whole time.
So we are now making doggies that can walk around and do their own thing.
Tell us about it. I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, they've gotten better at having the dogs move around. It's kind of like that larger.
The Boston Dynamics. What's his name? Fido? Boston Dynamics is the last.
Yeah, that's what actually I'm talking about.
Yeah, no, if anyone's curious about the robot we're talking about, open up your old Google, your Ask Jeeves, whatever you got, and type in Boston Dynamics, and you'll see these horrible headless four-legged robots running around jumping over boxes.
Okay, or, they got one with a snake head.
Or links in the show notes to the video.
There's a snake head. That thing is terrifying looking.
Exactly. Aren't they cute? You just want to pet them?
Oh my gosh.
And be like, yay, Fido.
So it's got like a snake head that it uses as a hand. And it moves in a completely unnatural, scary, freaking way.
Yep. So good thing they're developing that.
It opened the door so the headless one could get in. So the headless one will have guns, and then they'll have a utility one with a hand.
Well, in Black Mirror, a little bit of spoiler, the one did lose his leg and decide to replace it with something else. Well, actually, he replaced it with a knife.
So
that I remember, he found a kitchen knife and used it as a leg.
Oh my god! So it's like child's play level of camp now.
Well, also,
you know, the Chucky doll.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Well, hey, this doggy could open up the door for you.
There's this. movie that Sci-Fi produced, I think like about the mid to late 90s, called Evolver. And it was about this laser tag robot that was part of this military defense program. But the contractor that developed it was like, oh, let's also use it for laser tag. And after they made this killer robot with machine guns that killed gorillas in Colombia, they decided to turn it loose and let kids play laser tag with it. And some kid is good at laser tag or virtual reality or something, got to take it home. And it started like killing his family and like the dog, and it was shooting steak knives at people. But the hilarious thing about it was it essentially was about like what a laser tag playing robot would have looked like in the mid 90s. It was about 3 feet tall, had tank treads, and couldn't go over curbs. So it wasn't like a terrible apocalyptic threat. Like they could have just like locked the doors and left the house and they would have been saved. But we're going upstairs.
So it's like Johnny Five, but instead of the laser.
And like less intimidating than Johnny Five. But like even though it wants to kill this kid's family, it's still less intimidating than Johnny Five. Like it was amazing that Sci-Fi stretched out like that much tension and drama from something that ostensibly plays laser tag, but switched to steak knives. You should check it out on YouTube. It's got to be up there somewhere. I'd be really surprised if there's like ever been a copyright takedown for it. I got it from a Winco movie rental clearance sale about 15 years ago on VHS, and I lost the tape. So I don't think they really care about this movie anymore because I haven't yet to see it on DVD.
Care that one.
Evolver. They might have been like spelled it funny too.
We'll look it up and see if we can throw the show notes for listeners. Look at that. His head. Look how big his neck is. And his head can stay perfectly still.
It is pretty magic. Actually, I was thinking when we were driving over here, because we got some good snow this morning? Last night? Yes.
Last night, this morning, a little bit, yeah.
They've got the self-driving cars, and now I kind of wonder how they handle on inclement weather, like snow and stuff. Like if they start spinning, do they just like know what to do and do it properly like we can't, or you know, what's the deal?
Well, and that's why a lot of them have been tested not on roads that go up and down, but the very square cities of like
really basic,
you know, Arizona, flat, simple. So there's the initial test, and I'm sure they're with practice and time they could do really fairly well.
It's not an slide into problem. Poles. Yeah, it's an interesting problem because like, how do you make it on a banana pill, no less?
Yes.
How do you make a car like figure out what's happening when it's sliding? Like, how do you let it know that it's sliding? And obviously, it can see where it's going and everything, but
LiDAR.
How does it just not like slam on the brakes or whatever?
Well, you have to, because you could program in a set of situations or a set of things like, do these things, do they work? And it would be able to go through a list faster than you could. Like, people pull themselves out of slides all the time.
Well, that's true.
So you're just telling the computer to do it faster, so it will figure out which scenario it's going to go through this
it's
list
going to be in.
Will actually pull it out of
the slide. And they can probably tell, like, the cars already know when to turn off, like, traction control and all that because it's too snowy and whatnot. So I bet they could probably measure the coefficient of friction on the freeway just based on how well the tires are responding. So, yeah. I was actually thinking of a different kind of dino, though.
Okay.
One that fights... Robo.
Robo.
There's double the robot dino news in this episode.
Ah, yes.
There's so many
I
robots.
Got a place for you.
You won't even know where to start.
How about Emerald City Comic Con in Seattle, March 1st through 3rd? Come play my garbage... throw garbage at dinosaur game.
What?
Yeah, it's Emerald City Comic Con. I don't know if they did any trickery with spacing to subvert a copyright claim, but yeah, they're still Emerald City Comic Con.
Well, that's
fine. And not everyone's changing their names.
Well, that's interesting.
Some of the smaller ones are doing it just so they don't have to deal with,
because they don't have lawyers.
They don't have the
I don't know if they worked out a deal or like maybe paid licensing to San Diego, but that's what they've been called and they're still called. Sort of. The event I started plugging and then skipped down my list very unprofessionally is the Indie Game Showcase. Me and a few other developers all have I'm not sure. It's not exactly a booth. It's just a collection of tables where we're demonstrating board games that we all developed, role-playing games, and there are three independently developed video games, including such stars as Never Stop Sneakin', one of my favorite stealth action games of like the last couple of years. They're going to be there. And Spooky Buns, Portland local game studio, is debuting their game Plunge. Spooky Buns, I think the team on that developed a bunch of Adult Swim games. And Plunge is kind of cool. It's a roguelike where you it's all swipe driven. And you walk toward like the end of this platform and fight monsters. So it's kind of a cool take on the dungeon crawlers and roguelikes, because it's turn-based and sort of a puzzle game in the movements. Also has a very interesting art style that I really like. But yeah, there's going to be those two. Robo V Dino is going to be there on Thursday, March 1st, Friday, March 2nd, and Saturday, March 3rd. And the entire convention goes until March 4th. And yeah, there's video games at all times on the second floor of the expo. So if you happen to be in Seattle early March, come check us out. At the very least, Emerald City Comic Con's really good, especially if you like comic book artists, because so many of them live in the Northwest.
And
yes, they are.
I'm going to
have a four-controller setup, so they and three other people can get together and throw garbage at dinosaurs.
Nice.
See who can collect the most dinos.
I was throwing garbage at dinosaurs last night. Pizzas and sandwiches and it looked like a garbage can lid. I'm not sure.
Did it go dink dink when it hit the walls?
Was that a hockey puck?
Oh. I never actually picked that thing up. I thought it was like
It's the air hockey puck. If you throw it at something, it bounces off the walls and knocks dinosaurs out in the way. It's the most fun weapon in the game. You should totally try it out. I
did not know that.
You could bolt.
Oh, yeah. It's like way better than the missile. The missile's kind of like it's fun to use, especially because you can blow up your teammates, but it's... yeah,
dangerous. You got to be careful.
You can blow yourself up.
It's
there.
Kind of the. Yeah, it's kind of the. Most of the time. Pro tip here: if you start using the rocket, it's a very difficult to use weapon, but it's mostly it's not as easy to control as the other one, so it might not be the best choice unless you have to take out a bunch of opponents.
Yeah, I more than once. In fact, almost every time I used the rocket, I blew myself up.
Yeah.
So if you can't make it to Seattle in March, keep your eyes peeled on Steam and itch.io, or itch.io, however you prefer to pronounce that. I don't think they've ever come out and said how you're supposed to pronounce that. Anyway, check those two sites. RoboView Dinos can be released this spring, so that's another way to play it if you don't want to pay for a plane ticket or swim to Seattle. That's a way you could get there. Dig a tunnel. That's another way.
Dig a boat.
And do you want to swim to Seattle for Emerald City Comic Con?
No, it's too cold.
Yeah, the water in Seattle is pretty cold. That's true. And the water here is even colder. I learned today that -11 Celsius is weird. 11 Fahrenheit.
Really?
Oh. Yeah. I was surprised to find
that. Seems like it's, for some reason, like every time I hear Celsius temperature, I always assume it's a more extreme version of Fahrenheit. It's weird that it's, because they're scaled differently, that's not always true.
Right.
Yeah, -11 Celsius sounds super cold. You're kind of like
disappointed, especially when they're...
So, I was thinking about temperatures today because of that, and I realized that you know, you say degrees Fahrenheit, but it's not degrees Celsius. It's just, you know, 11 Celsius or 10 Celsius or whatever, right? Technically, you don't say degrees, although a lot of people do. It's in the regular vernacular. So then it got me wondering, like, is Fahrenheit just a measure of angle? I didn't look it up because I forgot about it before I had a chance. But then I was thinking you could convert degrees Fahrenheit into radians. And I thought that might be a fun little exercise.
Oh man, it feels like 2 degrees out here. I'm sweating. Oh man, I hope it drops. I guess it'd be 2 radians. It feels like 2 radians out here. Jeez, I wish it'd go down to 1.8 radians. That's that'd be a lot nicer.
That's just kind of looking at that. I was like, huh.
Yeah, so it has to do with pi. It's, you know, trig and whatnot. But what is it? 360 degrees is 2 pi radians. So, I mean, you can do the math on that. But a radian is quite small as compared to a degree, like 0.00 or 0.017 or something like that. So, yeah, one radian.
That's like a good chunk of a circle. The two game engines I've written RoboV Dino in, one of them used radians for all of its angles, and the other one is kind of interchangeable, which has been nice. But there's certain stuff that you have to use degrees on, and that's not like a huge deal. It's kind of more intuitive to me. But yeah, I had to like rewrite a bunch of stuff because all the logic I had written in the other end was all in radians.
Yeah, I never really dealt with angles in degrees that much, but I did take a lot of trig and calculus and whatnot in college. So
radians and degrees are kind of weird. That's like a to me, like from Sumeria, personally. Isn't it? Like that's where we got like there's going to be 360 of these because we said so, and 6 is a cool number. That's where it came from because they used a base 16 counting system or something. Oh, maybe that's what it was.
I thought they used base 30. Yeah, I thought it was like a really huge base, which seemed weird. So one radian would be 57.296 degrees. So, yeah, one radian outside is, it's warm and it's shorts weather as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah,
shorts weather. But I don't know if that's what the degrees refer to in temperature. I kind of just like envisioned like someone sitting with like a one of those things that measure angles. Like the
like the protractor.
The half circle thing. Yeah, so I imagine someone just sitting there with that and looking at a thermometer going, well, the angle is now 55 degrees up. So we're going to call it, yeah, this is how we're going to measure it. Because, you know, the mercury in the dial. But I don't know that that's the case because I never looked it up.
Yeah, that Fahrenheit guy, he got to play an important part in history just because he didn't want to like come up with a simpler unit than, I don't know, I put some mercury in a tube, but went up to here, I said that was like 70.
I keep finding the wrong converter.
Yeah, you're finding weird converters. I think you should just stop trying.
Rankin and...
Yeah.
No. I quit.
Yeah, that's probably best.
It's a good time to stop, too.
So, well, I did have a question for Alex. I was wondering, Alex, if you... because you're almost ready to launch this RoboV Dyno, and it's been kind of an experience for you. Would you suggest
for video games? I don't know. Ask me again after it's out. I've had fun doing it, but it's so far my paycheck from RoboV Dyno, my declared income for last year from this new business venture was -$3,000. So it's not exactly bringing in the cash. That's excluding expenses. That's like money I've just straight up spent to produce the game, not counting like food and shelter. So, a better way to look at it is video games. I consider them an art form, but the art form that they're communicating is experience. If you want to be an artist of experience and put any jazz hands you want with that when you hear it, you should do it for that reason and not for and not for money, because your odds of actually turning like a, or not even turning a profit, but breaking even on what you spend on a video game is basically 5%. That's about the success rate of people who can like that's the kind of the success rate of any game turning a profit. And there's like big games and little games, and there's like some amount of luck involved in it. So you don't have to like follow any particular path to make a video game, and nobody's got like consistent advice that they can give on like what will result in you having a good time doing it, and ideally being able to survive on income from it. So my thought is, if you're interested in making a video game, you probably should, and just do it for that reason.
So it's like any other artistic venture. It's really, you should do it enjoy it. And if you're wanting to actually
not even money then, from it, you should probably join a big game studio. I don't think, because the big studios like have a hard time making money, unless it's like EA or something. And those are generally not fun to work at. Not really.
Well, but they pay their employees is my point.
Well, they do, but the other thing is, even though you throw tons of money at something, doesn't mean it's going to succeed. There's plenty of games.
My point was is that you would be working for an employer, and hopefully,
yeah. There's a in terms of like other areas of and video games are in the entertainment industry, but the skills and talents that people bring to them are more in line with the software development industry, and that's the amount of the return on investment for effort on a video game is much lower than any software project you can imagine. And if you're putting that much effort into some vision that you don't particularly care about, which is a lot of games like Madden and stuff like that, if you're unless you're like a big sports head or something, it's probably not going to be a satisfying experience. And that's one of the reasons that there are so many independent developers, just because there's especially like in terms of attrition from bigger studios, is because they just got tired of making like the new Madden or like the new movie tie-in game or anything along those lines. It's really hard to like find satisfying work at a big game industry,
right,
unless you're just like a biz dev person, or you're doing software development, actually getting paid well for one of the bigger shops. But yeah, but that's, I guess there's a really good talk by Rami Ismail, one of the two founders of Flambeer, the Dutch game studio, called All Advice is Bad. And that kind of is a good encapsulation of like the state of the industry from my perspective, nobody can really give a good recommendation for what to do in this industry because nobody really knows. And there isn't like there's this thing called survivorship bias about you might look at someone who did well and say, oh, well, if I do what they did, then I'll make it out of this just fine, and end up ignoring like things that you might do wrong. And those are a lot harder to tell. And when you get to the point you're doing the research that you could actually determine what those things are,
right,
the industry might have changed in that time. The lesson learned might be too little too late. It's a really rough thing to go into unless you just want to do it to make the product at the end, which is what Robo V Dino is for me. I just want to make this weird throw garbage at Dinosaur Simulator, and however well it does is secondary to it just going out the door. That's my thought. Treat it as an artistic pursuit. Don't treat it as a career choice.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I've got all these ideas, but most of my ideas don't come to fruition. So,
if you're
Crud,
I was going to give you recommendations not too useful. Is it like, oh, there's a check out like a local a local game development organization, and I was going to say Pig Squad. I'm like, oh yeah, that's a Portland thing. There are online support groups that have like I make it sound like we're alcoholics, but there are like online support groups of like independent developers that can give like granular feedback and like give you access to tools or like collaborations with people that are similarly strapped for time or might have like complementary skills to whatever skills you can bring to game development. TIGSource, the independent gaming source, TIGSOURCEE.com, is one of the big hubs for that. They're definitely worth checking out if you're looking into doing some part-time game development, or what I consider to be the new cultural capital for all of independent game development, itch.io or itch.io. The web address is itch.io. They let anybody publish any game they want on their site, and they have very agreeable profit models. Like you can choose to have people donate, you have people choose a price to pay for your game, or you can like just set a fixed price if you want. And that's kind of a good platform to like play like very tiny independent games or publish your games and meet other developers that are kind of in a similar situation and maybe don't work at Ubisoft. Maybe they are part-time. Maybe they're just making games part-time.
Cool.
Something else I've also heard, if making the entire game is kind of a lot, you also can make parts of games that people can use in their games. So you keep the update of these little pieces that make the game work together. You know, kind of like how the
totally.
They're using id graphics or stuff like
Unity,
that.
Unity has this thing called the Asset Store, which is exactly that's a marketplace for people to put game assets up. So like if you're not a very good artist, or in my case, like you're not a very good musician, you can like buy like pre-made stuff that you have royalty free access to. So you can put in your game and like reuse it and pretend like it's your own. and distribute with your game without any worries of like copyright infringement or anything like that coming back to bite you. That is kind of a fun way to like for pixel artists or like 3D modelers to make stuff and then not have to worry about like putting in a game. They could just sell off the assets to somebody else and they can enjoy it. That is a really fun cottage industry. There's a lot of folks that kind of watch out from the independent game industry and they're like, well, I only like making sound effects, so maybe I'll just make sound effects for games. That's my non-advice for anybody following this path. Basically, don't do it unless you want to. Yes, make sure you have a spouse
rely on
that,
it for
that will
your
feed and
sole
clothe you.
Income. Okay.
Or trust fund, mom and dad, any of those.
I expect you to find a good job near Seattle so we can move there and I can live out my dream of developing an indie game.
Is that what you want to do, Ted?
Yep.
Oh boy.
So,
future plans.
Find a good job.
Just make one really popular game on the phone and sell it. Or have it just make income, never update it.
That's a good idea.
Have ads.
I should do that.
Don't name it Flappy Bird.
It's a good idea.
Or rip off somebody else's. You know, there's a billion of those. No, don't rip up. Make something new. Creative.
I'll just make a game that has every fun, time-wasty game.
Oh, you could make like one of those 101 apps that's like, there's like the fart app and the flashlight app and the lighter app. I was really amazed with how many of those were in the App Store for a while because they were just like letting those in like candy. And then one day Apple freaked out. They're like, no more. And they put like a specific exclusion for fart apps in the in like the developer agreement. If you submit a fart app, they will not approve it. Yeah, it's like the language specifically says no fart apps in the developer agreement, which is kind of funny. There's like a legally binding agreement that specifies no farting. But maybe Google Play. You could take your farts there. Save them all up and just blow them out in the store.
Well, the thing is, it's not a fart app.
You might be able to dodge
farts.
You might be able to dodge the bullet there.
There you go. Be the only one who gets around it, and then they figure it out.
But then make a silent fart app.
Good job.
It's just a JPEG. Like you open it up and that's it. Like you're pressing the button. Like it's totally silent. You can't hear it. I should make like the postmodern SBD fart app and then put it up on Google Play. That seems like a good next app for me.
That's a good idea. Mm-hmm. Now you got something to fall back on.
All right, now we'll wrap things up.
Check out Robo V Dino this words. Spring.
Alex.
You should go watch Coco. It's such a good movie.
Check out Robo V Dino this spring. You should watch Coco. It's such a good movie.
You should give us a call at 801-896-4335. And we may answer your questions if you have a question. Or you can send us an email, geeksarewired@gmail.com. And we'll answer the questions there too. On the recording.